to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Andrea and Ron DeFeo, Dr. Robert Peskin, and Dr. Raymond Ellis. Efficient urban travel is critical to the economic and social success of cities. A variety of technologies, both old and new, are designed and deployed to meet these mobility needs. Bus rapid transit is a popular option today because of its promise for improved service quality and capacity, as well as lower costs than some fixed rail transit options. What's new in BRT in the U.S. and around the world? The best person to help us learn about BRT is Samuel Zimmerman, who's an experienced transportation planner, a consultant to the World Bank, and an expert on bus rapid transit. Thanks for joining us today, Sam.
Well, thank you for having me. It'd be a pleasure to speak about that.
Sam, remind us. Some of us know something about BRT and many of us don't. How would you define it?
I would define BRT as an integrated rapid transit system comprised of elements which work together for a common purpose, which, as you pointed out, is to move people efficiently, effectively, in an attractive, safe, secure environment. The elements of BRT consists of a dedicated running way in most cases, number one, a service plan, and the service plan has some unique attributes, such as it doesn't stop every 100 meters, number one. Number two, it has frequent enough service that you don't need a schedule, and it's highly reliable. It has vehicles that are configured for the market and for that service provided. It has stations and terminals, not stops, not mud puddles with a sign that say bus. And it's a perfect application of a variety of ITS components such as fare collection, passenger information, real-time communications and control from a central control room for reliability purposes. And it's also branded. It's not just any old bus operating on a station that's ill-defined as particularly associated with that system. It has many of the attributes of light or heavy rail, actually, with the exception that because it uses vehicles that can be steered and have independent power sources, it can provide a variety of services, unlike most rail systems, which are fixed by route and also have to stop at every station.
It's a really interesting definition, in particular because you start out with the notion of service plan and integration. So your focus is really not on, I'm using buses in a particular way, but it's delivery of a system of services.
Well, that's exactly right. The starting point for planning a BRT system, and I think it should be for any transit system, is what's the problem you're trying to solve? What's the market, the current market for public transport and the expected future market? And that means who's traveling, where are they going, when are they going, what are the linkages of this particular trip to other trips. And based on that market, you propose a service plan. And it's not only for vehicles that may go up and down a fixed guideway, but it's also for ancillary services that are necessary to connect that with other places. And in some cases, the services go both off and on the transitway. The hardware, which everybody tends to focus on. You use the term technologies. The technologies are secondary, not in the sense of importance, but you'd think about them next. Perfect illustration of that. If you have a BRT line, which because of the nature of the corridor, maybe it looks like Michigan Avenue in the case of Chicago, or maybe the corridor looks like 1st or 2nd Avenue in New York, where the service is restricted to one particular major street, let's say, and the vehicles don't leave. There's lots of offs and ons. Capacity is an issue. Then that service pattern and market would drive you to the highest capacity vehicles you could get, which frankly are usually high floor in the parlance of the developing world, something in the order of a meter. And the reason the high floor vehicle makes sense in that application is because there's no wheel well intrusion and no propulsion system intrusion. So the floor is relatively flat, just like a rail car. And accessibility by the disabled, or frankly by anybody, isn't an issue because the station platforms and the floor of the vehicle is the same height. And the station is accessible by ramps, escalators, elevators, what have you. On the other hand, if you have a typical North American or Australian environment where you may have a big CBD, but you have low density residential areas surrounding it, where it's very important to provide as door-to-door service without a transfer as you can, then a low-floor vehicle makes more sense because every station doesn't have 15,000 boardings. And the low floor is an advantage, of course, because the stations can be inserted, in the parlance of the French, into a kind of a lower density, more residential environment. So I'm trying to illustrate that the starting point is the problem you're trying to solve, not the technology. And the technology flows from that problem and the service solution to it.
And the technology varies from application to application.
Absolutely. A BRT system in Bogota, people in the U.S. may not be familiar. Bogota's busiest BRT line has a volume of about 45,000 people an hour. The busiest L line in Chicago, I think you're sitting somewhere near Chicago, I believe is in the neighborhood of 15,000 an hour. So Bogota has a BRT line that has to provide the capacity, and frankly, they are at capacity, three times higher than any line in the L in Chicago or in Washington, for that matter. On the other hand, there are BRT applications in Australia, perhaps, and some of the U.S. cities, which maybe have 1,000 people an hour. Well, clearly, the design parameters, often called design criteria, for something that would be in Bogota, or I just came from Pakistan, something in Pakistan would have to be a lot different than what you might find in a typical Western European city or even U.S., French.
From a design standpoint, though, I think people in the U.S. who realistically will not see 40,000 passengers per hour past a point would think in that design range about trains, the capability to hook vehicles together operated by maybe a single person or by no person at all.
Well, first of all, you got to remember that the operating and maintenance costs and capacity are not just a function of trains. There's also the function of how they're operated. If you have a little bus that stops at every corner and everyone pays their fare to a driver or has to tap on and ultimately tap off, that's going to have very low capacity and very low speed. But if you have an 18-meter long vehicle where you have four double doors, let's say, or in the case of Bogota, five double doors, you can get on without stepping up, without a gap, you have a much different capacity. There's a lot of mythologies around about BRT, and one of them is that it costs more to operate than rail. And the fact of the matter is, if you look at L.A., I was just looking at the data today from L.A. CMTA, on a passenger kilometer, passenger mile basis, the BRT line, the orange line, costs significantly less than all the LRT lines there on a passenger kilometer basis. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, it's just about the same as the heavy rail line. So if you want the operating maintenance cost savings, you have to go to train. In effect, in a lot of situations, not all, the train's more expensive to operate. And in some cases, the BRT will actually have a higher capacity, not lower. That's number one. Number two, this is 2018. I think a lot of people are talking about autonomous vehicles in terms of cars. But we already have situations where trucks are operating in platoons under the control of a single driver. There are experiments all over the world in that. I can send anybody that wants some literature on that. And clearly, that kind of technology has an application in buses. So we're going to see electronically hooked together buses that provide that one driver, X number of vehicles, advantages that rail has. So I think over time, people will learn what the truth is about BRT, number one. And number two, I think you'll see technology sort of melding a lot of the attributes of the two modes.
I think it's very easy for people to get focused on a name or on a technology and to advocate in that direction as opposed to thinking about the problem and then looking for a right solution, which is the direction you're taking us.
Well, I think that's what I would like to tell people is when you buy anything for yourself, whatever it might be, a pair of shoes, a car, a house, you start with, well, what am I going to do with that? The shoes that you wear to a party are different than the shoes that you wear when you go out for a trek in the closest state or national park, right? So you start with the functions, and then you go out and look for shoes. You pay attention to price. You pay attention to quality, and you make a choice. And another name for that is called alternatives analysis. You don't start out and say, I need a pair of Ferragamo loafers, because everybody knows they're expensive and they're the best shoes if you're going to be going hunting with them or fishing with them. So we don't do that in personal life. And why we tend to do that in making billions and billions of dollar investments, it just beggars the imagination. I just can't figure out why people start with the solution, do a contrived, quote, feasibility study, and then go forward without ever looking at what the problem is and what the options for solving the problem happen to be.
I was going to ask you for an explanation of that behavior, but maybe we'll get to that in a moment. But my understanding is that BRT has been around for at least four decades. What's new in 2018? What do you see happening around the world?
I think at the beginning, when people were talking about using bus-based rapid transit, people couldn't see it. If I remember a book that was done by a dear friend of both of ours, Herbert Levinson, for a combination of federal transit and federal highways, he used the term bus rapid transit. People couldn't think that you could actually do anything. They couldn't see it. It wasn't until people started trying different aspects of BRT in the United States. And the first thing, of course, were bus lanes. But this notion of buses as part of an integrated system with a uniquely high quality of service, image, etc., is something that was first done in Curitiba in Brazil for want of the money to do something else. And the guy's name that did that was Jaime Lerner, the mayor and then later governor of the state. But this capacity thing, this taking people out of cars as opposed to people that had no options, really came to the fore in, worldwide in Bogota, and that was in 2000. Again, a systematic approach to maximizing capacity and quality of service with the least cost possible. I think the things that are changing now with BRT are, number one, people are paying attention to vehicle aesthetics. It's not just any bus. Almost every major bus manufacturer in the world is focused on producing a BRT vehicle of high capacity that's attractive, not just a box on wheels, number one. Number two, advances in the propulsion system have made a big difference. At one time, your choices were diesel, you could clean it up, but it still made a lot of noise. And now you have hybrid vehicles, which have a lot less noise and a lot less emissions than a straight diesel. A lot of the hybrids are plug-in hybrids, which means you only need the diesel engine when the battery runs out. So you could go into the downtown of a city, let's say Chicago, New York, with a fully electric vehicle making no noise, producing no emissions, do the part of your BRT run there, and then when you go out into a more suburban environment, then turn the engine on. And of course, the engine, now we know, it doesn't have to be diesel, it could be CNG. So that's the second thing. And third, we're starting to see BRT vehicles that are all electric. The number of manufacturers that make acceptable range, 18-meter or above BRT vehicles that are all electric is, I can't give you the numbers, but it's large. The magic number seems to be able to operate around 300 kilometers, all electric. And there's a Chinese manufacturer, 18 meters. There's a Canadian manufacturer, New Flyer, among others that have those vehicles. And last, I think the automation and the system of ITS applications that make buses safer and relieve pressure on drivers and eventually will obviate the need for drivers in every vehicle, they're here. You can buy a car that will basically steer itself, keep it from diverting plus or minus a few centimeters from a path. You can buy a car that will stop automatically if anybody sits in front of it or set off an alarm if anybody is behind it or on either side. So these technologies that I think were originally developed with cars and trucks in mind as an integrated package are starting to find their way into BRT systems as well.
Sam, what's been the experience in the last decade or so in the United States? Have we seen a great expansion of BRT mileage?
I think you have, but a lot of, you know, it's sort of funny. A lot of people say, well, I can't afford LRT, so I'll do BRT instead. You have, but the number of, let's call them full-featured BRT systems, it's still rather limited. You have something that I would refer to as BRT Lite, that has some or most of the attributes of a full-featured BRT system, but not all. L.A., Orange Line, Cleveland, they're the whole shooting match. Dedicated rights-of-way, largely. off-board fare collection, dedicated vehicles. Now, the Orange Line in L.A. will be all electric, by the way. They've already signed the contract, I believe, to buy all electric vehicles. But generally, the BRT applications in the States are BRT light. They have a little bit of dedicated right-of-way or not. You see them all over the U.S. now. And I think that's a result of a move by transit planners towards something that you could call a market-segmented, hierarchical public transport system in which not every route looks and functions the same. So the routes in the busiest streets, for an example, busiest corridors like in Houston, will have be upgraded to something akin to BRT light, while the regular standard local bus is applied in other corridors, and the least busy corridors, some kind of automated app-based ride-sharing. And you're seeing that Seattle, Houston, I think Baltimore is considering that. A whole bunch of cities are changing their way of thinking from one kind of route, one kind of bus does everything, to a multifaceted system based on the different markets for mobility.
How have BRT Light worked out?
I think it's worked out very well. I mean, L.A., any place where you've taken this approach, let's call it Seattle, you've gotten the kind of response that people normally attribute to a rail system. You've gotten significant percentages of customers on those new lines, like the L.A. Wilshire line, came out of cars. Just, you know, belying the myth that people who ride a train won't ride a bus, number one. Number two, I think you've had significant increases in reliability and the basic quality of service. So I think they worked out quite well. Not as well as a light rail line would have worked out or a full-featured BRT line. And I say that in the same breath because I don't see the significant differences.
Can we deliver that full-featured BRT line at lower cost than the light rail line?
Absolutely, without a question. And the reason for it is the attribute I just mentioned. The market for buses in the U.S. and Canada is about 4,000 or 5,000 a year. The market for light rail vehicles at best is in the hundreds. So the economies of scale that are afforded a vehicle which uses a lot of its equipment from the truck business, frankly, or even from the car business, makes it a lot less expensive, number one. Number two, tracks and wires and signal systems that are uniquely configured for a light rail application are expensive. I can't tell you what the factors would be because it depends on the application. If you're putting both of them in a tunnel, for an example, maybe the cross-section matters. But on the other hand, if you have an automated BRT vehicle whose trajectory is plus or minus a few centimeters, which is roughly the same as you have with light rail, maybe even there it wouldn't matter. But I think you've got to look at it case by case on the cost side, the benefit side, ridership, etc. Forgive me for sounding like a big advocate, not for BRT, but for alternatives analysis. That's really what I'm an advocate of. Transit, number one, without regard to mode. And number two, thinking about what you do when it involves a lot of money, if money matters.
Sounds like a right way to make decisions.
I think so. I mean, I went to planning school. You've taught a generation of students at Northwestern that, if I'm not mistaken, thinks exactly like I do. So I assume that you do as well.
I'm counting on them thinking that way. I want to wrap up with a future-oriented question, and that is everybody that I am listening to is talking about self-driving cars. Are self-driving cars a threat to BRT, or are they an opportunity for BRT?
Well, first of all, let's not talk about BRT with respect to self-driving cars. I think let's talk about public transportation. And I think you've got to widen the definition of what public transport is. And that's what I was trying to do there with the BRT, BRT light, light rail discussion. But I think you still have the laws of physics when it comes to self-driving cars. What I mean by that, if you include the red and the blue lines in a north-south direction in the central part of Chicago, in a downtown of maybe 650,000, 700,000 jobs stacked 100 stories high, even self-driving cars have physical space around them, which on a per-person basis is enormous. And sticking everybody in a self-driving car that now uses three or four major lines in subway up in the L, I think the number of buses an hour on Michigan Avenue is about 120. Doing that with cars, whether they're self-driving or not, it's just not going to happen. So the question I would have with regard to this automated cars is, do you still want cities for pedestrians? Do you still want cities that offer all kinds of different activities in a relatively limited space? If you do, then self-driving cars are maybe not going to fit in there. They may fit in other environments, typical suburban environments. But even there, I think the definition of public transportation is going to change. It's already changing. It's via Lyft or Uber applications that feature shared riding, where you walk a block based on where your app tells you to walk, and there's a vehicle that comes by that has 20 people in it that's much faster, much more reliable than a conventional local bus. Would you call that public transportation? See, I would.
It sounds like public transportation to me.
If it sounds like it, looks like it, functions like it, it is. But if your definition of public transportation is either a bus creeping along, belching smoke and mixed traffic, or a train underground, up in the air, or at grade, then maybe it's not public transportation. But I think that's changing. So I don't see automated cars as a threat to public transportation. I see the automation as something that allows for different public transportation services to meet different needs.
I think that's an optimistic note to finish on. I think when we look at self-driving cars and these ride-sharing services, we forget that the vehicle takes up space and it has to be someplace at all times.
The laws of physics are not going to go away, even with automated cars. Two things occupying the same space at the same time.
I'm encouraged by that. Sam, thank you very much. Really interesting discussion. I look forward to tracking what you're doing and what the industry is doing going forward.
Well, thank you, Joe. It's always a pleasure.